The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon, the founder of the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry and the winner of the 2010 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for Service to the Jewish People. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com. Or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, and it's also just 4 days before the wonderful winter holiday of Hanukkah begins, coming this Wednesday night, December 1st at sundown. Thanksgiving is the principal holiday of overeating in American tradition, or what we call fressing in Yiddish. It's just a little unfortunate that this year Hanukkah begins so soon after Thanksgiving. This gives us no time at all to lose all the weight we gained this weekend eating turkey and pumpkin pie and stuffing. Was there ever a more descriptively named food in human history? Before we start chowing down on Hanukkah, on latkes and brisket and sufganiyot jelly donuts, and all the other traditional fried, delicious, and very heavy foods of the coming Festival of Lights. While I assume that more than a few of you are headed for shopping dates at the mall this morning or other such activities, it's worth noting that the real purpose of this Thanksgiving weekend is to give thanks to God for all that we already have, not for what we are about to purchase. The whole process of giving thanks is interesting. We all have much to give thanks for, of course, but we usually take most of those things we should feel grateful for and take them for granted. In truth, if we have enough to eat, and this weekend, boy, have we had enough to eat, and clothes to wear and a place to sleep, we should feel pretty good about things. And if we are also blessed with health and family and friends, then we have enough to truly celebrate. So let's give thanks, offer a prayer to God for the many good things in our lives, and enjoy the end of this holiday weekend together. Modim anachnu lach. We give thanks to you, God, for the goodness you create in our lives that allows us to enjoy life together and to celebrate holidays like Thanksgiving and Hanukkah. Because, as you faithful two Jewish listeners know already, both Hanukkah and Thanksgiving are based on the Jewish festival of gratitude from the Bible, Sukkot. And so to play us in on this fine Thanksgiving weekend morning, here's a little pre-Hanukkah music from our vast store of tunes for the coming Festival of Lights. Again, it begins Wednesday night. Maoz Tzur, Rock of Ages, the Jewish hymn for Hanukkah, this time a setting by the Italian composer Benedetto Marcello.
Yeah.
That was the Renaissance Baroque version of Mahler's Suite, setting by Benedetto Marcello, for Hanukkah, coming this week. Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon, the founder of the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry, NACOJ, has worked long and hard to save tens of thousands of Ethiopian Jews from starvation and persecution, and helped to bring many to Israel. She is the winner of the 2010 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for Service to Klal Yisrael, the Peoplehood of Israel, and we'll find out what got her interested in Ethiopian Jews, and how she helped change their world and ours, when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. I'm feeling lazy today and don't feel like writing a commercial. Instead, I'm going to read a letter we got the other day. Dear Mamas, thanks so much for your help recently when my car died outside your restaurant. But most important, thank you for the years of awesome service. You proved the difference between a good business and a great business is the people who run it. When I first walked into Mama's in 1982, I knew Mama and Pop were special. We used to chat while Mama made the pizza sauce and Pop told stories about pretty much everything. As we've gotten to know the rest of the family, I know Mama and Pop would be so proud of their legacy. Families like yours are hard to find, and we feel like we're a part of it. Thank you. Signed, Alex, Tracy, and Lexi. Well, guys, you are part of our family. And thanks for reminding us that it really is the family in our family business that's made Mama's what it is today. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
The greatest Hanukkah on earth is coming up fast. It's coming to Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, December 5th at 4:30 p.m. Join us for the largest, best, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all, featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 12th Annual Festival of Lights as never before. Start by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. Then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, the Tucson Girls Chorus, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choirs, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and six candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that'll make this the most memorable Hanukkah celebration ever. The Hanukkah event is open to all. It's co-sponsored by KGUN 9 TV. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the temple at 520-327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Remember, the show is free, but call to come for dinner. That's Sunday, December 5th, beginning at 4:30 p.m. The centennial edition of the greatest Hanukkah on Earth, 12, at Temple Emmanuel. Call 520-327-4501.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon. She's the founder of the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry, the wonderful organization NACOJ, and the winner of the 57-71 is more appropriate, Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for Service to the Jewish People and Klal Yisrael. In 1982, a handful of dedicated men and women met in Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon's New York apartment, organized NACOJ. Today, under her leadership, it has some 50,000 supporters and a record of having rescued thousands of Ethiopian Jews from famine, civil war, and persecution. She has received a variety of awards and yet continues to work to help Ethiopian Jews who are in distress and are, in fact, in the process of being accepted into Israeli society. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So what prompted you to enter into this, what at the time in 1982 certainly was a rather obscure area? Ethiopian Jews had been separated from the main body of the Jewish people for, well, since First Temple times, 2,000 years and more. What led you to get involved?
I think it was the fact that there were so few people who knew about them or cared about them. I was told about them by a friend of mine who had sent me on a mission to Romania to meet with refuseniks there. And when he told me about the Ethiopian Jews and told me that for the first time in years it was going to be possible to go, I just thought, of course, I have to go. And I did.
What's the most exciting moment that you've had in your long history with NACOJ?
Oh, my. That's a hard question. I was in Operation Solomon, that great miracle that took place in May of 1991. That was probably the greatest highlight of life to virtually anybody who was in there, short of giving birth to your children. And you know, the recent decision of the Israeli government to restart the Aliyah from Ethiopia, and that only took place, that decision was made just a few days ago, that's a pretty big one too.
You know, for those of our listeners who don't remember or don't know, in May of 1991, there was a kind of a brief ceasefire in the Ethiopian Civil War. And in one weekend, some 14,000 Ethiopian Jews were airlifted to Israel in Hercules transports and other planes in 36 hours. So an extraordinary, kind of an amazing story. I have a confession. I got to Israel in June of 1991 to start rabbinical school and ended up working with a lot of the Ethiopian Jews, or some of them anyway, who had just come over. Amazing time. How many Jews are left in Ethiopia?
Well, the number that the Israelis are going to check is almost 8,000, 7,800 and some odd. And, of course, there are more born every day and some die, so the number changes a little bit. But that is the core community. That's the community we have been taking care of and urging the Israelis to check the credentials of now for some years. And I think that's the vast majority, if not everybody, of those still in Ethiopia.
We will talk much more with Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon about the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry, Ethiopian Jews, both in Ethiopia and in Israel and elsewhere, when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Whether a hurricane that renders thousands homeless or the death of a child, disasters great and small challenge the faith of the most devout and fuel the arguments of the bitterest cynic. No one has spoken to the challenge of maintaining faith, purpose, and meaning better than Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of the best-selling book on the problem of evil, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Temple Emmanuel is proud to invite everyone to hear Rabbi Kushner in a special program on Wednesday, December 15th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at Temple Emmanuel by calling 327-4501. One of the most popular and important speakers in the world today, Rabbi Harold Kushner speaks to the heart of what it means to be human and how we can overcome adversity to flourish in all circumstances. Rabbi Kushner's new book, Conquering Fear, Living Boldly in an Uncertain World, has received rave reviews. For those who wish to become sponsors of this important event, there's a dinner before his talk by reservation only. Hear world-famous speaker and writer, Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of the book When Bad Things Happen to Good People, at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, on Wednesday night, December 15th at 7:30 p.m. Call 327-4501 for tickets or for more information.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. Hanukkah starts this week, Wednesday night, December 1st at sundown, and while it has the reputation for being a kid's holiday, the truth is that its themes are much larger than that. If Passover celebrates the triumph of personal freedom from slavery, Hanukkah celebrates the victory of religious freedom, the right of each of us and each community to worship God as we wish. But it is a lot of fun. So to get us in the festive spirit, here's Adam Sandler's now classic first version of his Hanukkah song.
Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have eight crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish, just like you and me. David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do James Conkirk Douglas and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli? Bowser from Shanana and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish, Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together. What a fine looking Jew. You don't need deck the halls or jingle bell rock, cause you can spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, both Jewish. Put on your yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah. The owner of the Seattle Supersonicas celebrates Hanukkah. O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. But guess who is? Hall of Famer Rod Carew. He converted. We got Ann Landers and her sister, dear Abby. Harrison Ford's a quarter Jewish, not too shabby. Some people think that Ebenezer Scrooge is. Well, he's not, but guess who is? All three Stooges. So many Jews are in showbiz. Tom Cruise isn't, but I heard his agent is. Tell your friend Veronica, it's time you celebrate Hanukkah. Hope I get a harmonica on this lovely, lovely Hanukkah. So drink your gin and tonica. Have a happy, 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 happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
That was Adam Sandler, my congregant this last Yom Kippur at Temple Emmanuel here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, singing the first version of his Hanukkah song. It's nearly time for latkes and candles. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Boker Tov and happy Thanksgiving weekend.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Your first American Thanksgiving. We have many things to be grateful for, the state of Israel not least among them, but Israel's public relations and their effectiveness at what's called hasbara, explaining themselves in the world, that hasn't been something we've felt terribly grateful for in the last, 10 years. What is Israel doing to address what everybody seems to acknowledge as a problem?
Well, first of all, I must agree, it is a problem. And I think even if we look at the word hasbara, or explaining or advocacy, we see the essence of the problem within the word, because no other country in the world handling explaining itself. You might call it, as you called it at the beginning, public relations or anything of that sort.
Press, but, you know, right.
Right. But usually you don't call it advocacy or hasbara. And I think that from my private perspective, the problem starts there, because the words you choose are making the thoughts you think. So when you tell somebody that you're advocating that you need to do hasbara, in a way they think you're already guilty.
Interesting. So accepting that Israel exists, obviously we don't need any advocacy to prove to us that Israel needs to be there, but boy, it sure seems that many sectors of society on campus and the media and elsewhere need to hear some kind of a positive image of Israel being created. How has Israel begun to address this problem?
Well, Israel is trying to address this issue, but I must tell you that, you know, as Israel has have only 7 million people living in it,
right,
and most of them are not fluent English speakers, most of them don't really know how to address American media, then, you know, we don't have a lot of strong points here. And I think the best way to go about this issue, and that's my private opinion, is to have Jewish people all across the United States that will help Israel. And I also think that a private person can sometimes write to the paper or say in the radio or in TV things that an official spokesman can't. And I think that's the main idea, because the other side have a lot of people that support its efforts.
So it seems like it might be our responsibility, actually, not Israel so much, to talk about all of the fantastic things there are to know about Israel, rather than wait for Israel to figure out the public relations problem.
You know, I think that's the right approach always. Always when I see a problem, any kind of problem, I always think first, what can I do to fix it?
Right.
And it's the easiest way out to say someone else needs to handle it, someone else needs to fix it, but it won't be fixed this way. You know, if your roof is dropping, nobody will fix your roof. You need to go up there and fix your roof. That's exactly the same here. We need the help of any person that supports Israel in this public relation affair for Israel.
Very interesting. Guy, thanks very much. We'll see you next week for Hanukkah and Chag Hanukkah Sameach.
Chag Hanukkah Sameach. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week on Too Jewish. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant and the J Bar, and now Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, Janos and J-Bar are two of not only my favorite restaurants in town, but two of my favorite restaurants in the world and a lot of other people's. What's going on at Janos and J-Bar right now?
Well, as you know, we love this time of year because we get all the fall products in. So all the menus have been updated with all the fall products, from apples from Wilcox, foraged wild mushrooms, incredible halibut, all over the menu. Great, great new things and great pricing. And of course, now's the time to start booking holiday parties as well.
Boy, so much to do at Janos and the J-Bar. What's the number to call?
615-6100.
And the website is janos.com.
That's right.
See you at Janos and the J-Bar this fall.
Thank you, Rabbi. I'll see you there.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Attention Arizona taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, formerly known as CATER. Here's how. The State of Arizona Private School Tax Credit allows Arizona taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, allowing scholarships for children in kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at the Tucson Hebrew Academy and the Jewish Community Center. If you make your donation today, you'll get 100% of your money back on your Arizona state income tax. A tax credit is not a deduction. Rather, it's money that comes directly back to you in your state tax return. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, please call 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. The deadline to take your tax credit is December 31st, so call or sign up online now.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, we had a lot of fun at that Israeli Epicurean Gala in Tucson here, where they had foods from all these different Jewish communities, women who had moved to Israel and preserved their native cuisines and then cooked it for us so we could taste some of the broad spread of what I guess really is Jewish cooking, isn't it?
Right. My only regret about that wonderful evening was that they didn't let the women talk more.
No, they didn't let them talk at all, actually.
Right. They represented such interesting, although in some cases tiny, percentages of the Israeli population. But their cuisine is, you know, as Jewish as gefilte fish is for us Ashkenazim. But it ranged from fish red curry with coconut and banana from Kerala in southwestern India, where there's the old Cochin Jewish community, through Tunisia and Morocco. There was Kurdistan, there was Yemen, there was Kazakhstan. It was quite a variety of foods, and all of them are as authentically Jewish as what we think of as Jewish food. So the interesting
chicken
thing
soup
is,
and matzo balls or kreplach or...
or more particularly like blintzes and gefilte fish and, you know, all these things which are really not particularly Jewish at all. They're Polish or Ukrainian or from northwestern Russia. And what that reflects really is our own demography as a Jewish community in North America. The vast majority of Jews came here from those areas and they brought their cuisine with them, and we thought of it, or we still think of it, as Jewish food, but in fact, it's not.
You mean telling me that bagels and lox is not Jewish food? Herring is not Jewish. How can this be?
Well, if you ever go to any place on the Baltic Sea,
right, herring's
and
everywhere.
You see a breakfast buffet, it will include like 12 kinds of herring, a much wider variety than the two kinds we know. We
and
know
very basically, spectacular herring, I might add, right. And other smoked fish, too.
I mean, we know pickled herring and schmaltz herring, basically.
Cream herring, don't forget herring
but
and cream
isn't
sauce.
Isn't that schmaltz herring?
Well, no. And then there's matzah's herring you can get sometimes. You know, well, I'm getting hungry just talking about this, and Thanksgiving weekend, you shouldn't be hungry.
Right. I will say that where I just was in Prague, they have the carp tradition for Christmas that they do in Poland. And what that means is there are special farms devoted to raising carp, and in the marketplace right before Christmas, they sell live carp, which you pick out, and then they kill it for you, and you take it home and make gefilte fish out of it. So again, what we think of as really the archetypal Jewish food is consumed by people who've never met a Jew in Prague and Warsaw and Krakow and all through the Habsburg lands, basically. And it's just, you know, yet another example of how Jews have incorporated so much of the cultures among which they live.
It's great. The carp in the bathtub, you know, wasn't originally Jewish, but it is, you know, now, just as all these other wonderful cuisines and these other elements that have become part of our Jewish tradition. Tom, thanks very much. We will digest a little the rest of the weekend and talk next week.
Look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. On the sixth day of creation, God turned to the angels and said, "Today, Today I'm going to create a land called Israel. It will be a land of snow-capped mountains, a sparkling lake surrounded by fertile land, forests with beautiful trees, cliffs overlooking sandy beaches, an abundance of ocean life just off the shore. And God continued, I shall make the land rich, and the inhabitants will prosper. I shall call these inhabitants Israelis, and they shall be known to the people of the earth. But Lord, asked the angels, don't you think you're being a little too generous to these Israelis? Not really, God replied. Just wait and see the neighbors I'm going to give them. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. In this week's portion of Miketz, we're in the midst of the fabulous story of Joseph, shorn now of his technicolor dream coat, locked away in an Egyptian prison. Dreams play a central role, and not for the first time in Genesis. Well, not even for the first time in the Joseph story. In this portion of Miketz, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, however, dreams a very famous dream. Well, two, really. Seven fat cows emerge from the Nile River, and then they're eaten by seven skinny cows. And then a second dream, seven fat ears of grain are devoured by seven lean ears of grain. He wakes up puzzled and disturbed. What does it all mean? None of the Egyptian king's brilliant advisors or counselors can help him. In desperation, he turns to a forgotten Hebrew prisoner who once helped his chief wine steward, that is, his bartender, when he was in jail. It is Joseph, the Hebrew slave, long forgotten. So Joseph is dragged from prison, cleaned up, brought to the Pharaoh, perhaps the most powerful man in the world at that time. Joseph listens to the dreams and then correctly interprets them, prophesying 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. Giving full credit to God for being his only source of insight, Joseph helps the Pharaoh to save Egypt, and things go well for both him and the country. He rises to great prominence, second in command, and the Pharaoh's power is multiplied while his people are saved from destruction. The story doesn't end there, of course. Joseph marries and has two children. But oddly, his great success, his fame throughout Egypt, and the new family aren't quite enough for Joseph. He misses his father, left behind in Canaan, pines for his younger brother Benjamin, the only living reminder of his dead mother, Rachel. He never expects to see his father and full brother again. But in a plot twist worthy of our finest novelist or most exciting reality TV show, his brothers are compelled by famine to come down to Egypt to buy bread. Suddenly, the same characters who beat him and sold him into slavery are in his power. What an amazing opportunity for revenge. And in this week's Torah portion of Miketz, Joseph seems to take advantage of that. He teases and torments his brothers. He, fully aware of their identity, and they, completely ignorant of his. What will happen? As the Torah portion concludes, we are left wondering just which way it'll all go. Next week we'll get the answer, but this week the issue is delineated. How exactly will an assimilated Jew respond to pressure to give up his identity? Just as the Jews in the days of the Maccabees struggled with tremendous pressure to accept cultural subjugation, to surrender their Judaism, so too Joseph struggled with hiding his identity or admitting it in public. In a season in which the majority culture can overwhelm us too with its songs, foods, and religious trappings, we Jews today sometimes struggle to assert our pride in our own Jewish identities. May we learn from the lessons of Joseph and the Maccabees that Jewish identity must be asserted proudly and with commitment, even in the darkest of days. Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon is the founder of NACOJ, the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry, and the winner of the 2010 5771 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to the Jewish people. Find out how many lives she and her organization have saved and how they did it when we come back on To Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
The greatest Hanukkah on earth is coming up fast. It's coming to Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, December 5th at 4:30 p.m. Join us for the largest, best, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all, featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 12th Annual Festival of Lights as never before. Start by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. Then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, the Tucson Girls Chorus, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choirs, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and six candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that'll make this the most memorable Hanukkah celebration ever. The Hanukkah event is open to all. It's co-sponsored by KGUN 9TV. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the Temple at 520-327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Remember, the show is free, but call to come for dinner. That's Sunday, December 5th, beginning at 4:30 p.m. The centennial edition of the greatest Hanukkah on Earth, 12, at Temple Emmanuel. Call 520-327-4501.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The battle over a fired senior staff member at AIPAC, the prominent pro-Israel lobbying organization in Washington, turned ugly last week. If you are a faithful listener to the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World, then you know that Steve Rosen was one of two AIPAC lobbyists, the other was Keith Weissman, fired in 2005 by AIPAC after the Justice Department indicted them under a rarely used espionage law for receiving and passing on classified information. That case was finally dropped by the Justice Department last year, but Rosen's $20 million civil suit against AIPAC is raging now, and it gets uglier and uglier as it goes on. Papers filed this month in the case include mutual accusations of using pornographic material at the lobby headquarters of AIPAC. Based on depositions taken from Rosen and AIPAC principals, these papers dig into the private lives of the involved parties in unseemly ways. They also detail the close ties AIPAC officials had with Israeli diplomats based in Washington. AIPAC meant to embarrass Rosen and revealed extensive parts of the deposition, some of them dealing directly with his personal life. In an interview after the documents were made public, Rosen said he was not deterred from his lawsuit. He promised that when he files his own motion in December, the information in it will put AIPAC in the hot seat. Any embarrassment I suffered as a result of what they filed will be insignificant compared to the embarrassment they'll suffer after we file our motion, Rosen said. Tit for tat. Rosen's civil lawsuit seeks compensation and damages from AIPAC and from an outside public relations advisor for defamation. Rosen said he suffered severe damage to his reputation when the PR firm issued a statement for AIPAC announcing that he and Weissman were fired because their actions did not, quote, comport with AIPAC standards. Everybody thought it related to the allegations that Rosen received classified information and passed it on to Israelis against AIPAC's official policy. But in its motion for summary judgment, filed November 5th, AIPAC cites a wider array of alleged points of misconduct. They claim that Rosen, director of foreign policy issues at the lobby and one of AIPAC's most senior and well-known employees, engaged in viewing pornography on their computers in the Washington office. Transcripts of the lengthy videotaped deposition of Rosen, which were made public as part of AIPAC's motion, showed Rosen admitting he had surfed pornographic websites from work. But he then went on to say that he had seen AIPAC Executive Director Howard Kaur viewing pornography, Kaur's Secretary Annette Franzen viewing pornography, perhaps a dozen other members of the AIPAC staff doing so. Other parts of the deposition reflect AIPAC's close ties to Israeli diplomats and raise questions about just how domestic AIPAC's agenda really is. Yuck. The whole matter is dragging AIPAC through the mud, but frankly, it's mud of their own making. I suggest, as a rabbi, that AIPAC settle this case before it gets even worse. Who really cares about the personal habits of these lobbyists? Isn't all this dreck just dragging AIPAC's image deeper and deeper down? Whatever happened to the concept of creating a shanda fardegoyim, a notion that we should wash our dirty laundry in private and only in private? In happier news, the new National Museum of American Jewish History on Independence Mall in Philadelphia opened a couple weeks ago to very positive reviews. Well, generally so. It's been years in the making, in part under the guidance of former Two Jewish guest and preeminent American Jewish historian Jonathan Sarna. And if the National Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. highlights the destruction of 6 million Jews and the near annihilation of the great civilizations of European Jewry, the Museum of American Jewish History chronicles instead the gradual flourishing of Jewish life in America, from the slow, fascinating growth of early Sephardic and German Jewish communities to the massive influx of the great wave of immigration from Eastern Europe in the 19th and early 20th centuries, to the wide acceptance and assimilation of today. Most reviews of this new museum are highly complimentary of the extensive and great displays, including items like a poem in praise of George Washington in a Hebrew acrostic from the 18th century. Nonetheless, some reviewers highlight the fact that the museum's emphasis on the great virtues of American freedom for Jews overwhelms other important themes of American Jewish history. For example, there's virtually no mention in the 15,000-foot exhibit space of the development of religious Judaism in America, except for Reform Judaism, which receives pretty good coverage. Now, as a Reform rabbi, this should be gratifying to me. Why shouldn't we all just be Reform Jews? It would make it so much easier. But as an American Jew who sees Judaism as much more than just Reform Judaism, and certainly not simply a cultural identity, I find the omission of serious mention of conservative Judaism, modern Orthodoxy, and the currently dynamic neo-Hasidic movement of Chabad Lubavitch to be a serious flaw. And for a Museum of American Jewish History located in Philadelphia, the heartland of Reconstructionist Judaism, does a Reconstructionist civilization actually have a heart? Well, perhaps. Anyway, it's inexplicable they omitted it. Still, on this Thanksgiving weekend, we should be very grateful for the addition of this important new Jewish museum to the national cultural and intellectual map of America. My favorite part of this story are the photos of the opening galas at the Museum of American Jewish History, which featured such prominent American Jews as Bette Midler, Jerry Seinfeld, Barbara Streisand, the pièce de résistance, and Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber? I guess we've made it here, or there, or in any case, within about 100 feet of the Liberty Bell. And Uganda's parliament may soon have its first Jewish member, Rabbi Gershon Sizomu, a native Ugandan trained and ordained in Los Angeles, has announced he is running for parliament. Should he win, he will be both the first Jew to hold an elective office in Uganda and the first rabbi to win an elected position anywhere outside of Israel. Huh. Maybe there's hope for me, too. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Barbara Ribicoff-Gordon. She's the founder of NACOJ, the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry, the most important organization assisting in bringing Ethiopian Jews out of Ethiopia and poverty and danger into Israel. They have worked over the course of their existence with approximately how many Ethiopian Jews have come out of Ethiopia and been brought to Israel?
Well, there are now over 120,000 Ethiopian Jews in Israel. I don't know exactly how many of them were born in Israel, but a great, great many of them have come by the great airlifts, Operation Moses, Operation Solomon, by individual rescues in which we were also involved, or by the small rescues that led up to and culminated in the famous Operation Moses and Operation Solomon. I think it's the great majority of those who are in Israel are either immigrants or born to immigrants.
Nakoj has provided in Ethiopia educational programs, food programs, employment, religious possibilities for Ethiopian Jews. What are the major challenges in providing those services? What have they been and what are they now?
Well, the major challenges, Rabbi, have always been funding the programs. It was clear from the beginning that we needed to provide food, especially to children who were so undernourished, that we needed to provide education. In Ethiopia, many of the children never had a school to go to. Many of the parents never learned to read and write, even in their own language, which was not for lack of interest in education, it was for lack of opportunity. And as for religious services in Ethiopia, their whole lives revolved around their religious commitment to Judaism and their firm belief that God wants every Jew to be in Israel. And the goal of their lives and what they told their children from the time they were born was, someday you will see Jerusalem. Someday, maybe even I will see Jerusalem. So we knew what was needed to survive in Ethiopia, and we knew that the thing they wanted more than anything else was to reach Israel. So we did our best with whatever resources we have had to provide the basic necessities that they could not provide for themselves: food, education, religious facilities, and hope of reaching Israel.
You know, when, I'm going back a long ways, but when I first encountered some of the pretty fresh Ethiopian immigrants to Israel, many of them had never seen a telephone. They were from Gondar province. Some of them had not really used a door handle much. It was sort of a Stone Age existence. How has their adaptation to Israel been, in your view?
Difficult, challenging, but amazingly successful. People say that it's not a success. I think it's an astonishing success. We have thousands of young Ethiopian Jews who were born in mud huts and whose fathers pushed a wooden plow over a rocky landscape, now going to universities in Israel and graduating as lawyers and doctors and scientists and teachers and social workers and people in the arts. It's quite amazing. I think of that group of Israeli physicians and nurses who were the first ones in Haiti to do really serious assistance after the terrible disaster there. And the surgeon was an Ethiopian Jew. We had helped him get his degree in Israel. There are Ethiopian Jewish kids now doing postdoctoral work at Harvard. And it's so recent. They're highly talented and intelligent people. And given half a chance, they will make it. If they don't get that half a chance in Israel, and that's where we try to help out, then, of course, you run into problems of school dropouts, of kids who become street kids, of families that can't handle the tremendous changes in behavior from Ethiopia to Israel, particularly in family relationships, relationships of children to parents. They are amazingly different. And so you have families that are really struggling to understand now how to relate between children and parents. For example, in Ethiopia, a well-brought-up child never looks an adult in the face when being spoken to, because that would be disrespectful. The child stands respectfully with his head down and listens. You can imagine the gigantic gigantic change when the child goes to Israel and starts school and the teacher says, look at me when I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
A child has a tremendous gap to cross and great difficulty in behaving one way in school and another way at home, and generally home behaviors lose out. And then the family struggles with it.
You know, I saw that even in the early 90s. The Kess is the sort of Kohen, the priest, mm-hmm. rabbi combination, religious leader of the community. They had tremendous reverence for their Kess in Ethiopia. They came to Israel, and the Kess had no standing whatsoever. I mean, none official, none with the religious authorities in Israel who were following halacha, rabbinic Judaism, which the Ethiopians really had not been exposed to till they got there. Very difficult transition.
It's actually something that not only the Kesach experience, but the men of a family.
Right.
In Ethiopia, they were kings, usually benevolent monarchs, but they were kings. Nobody contradicted them, and by the time they reached the old age of, say, 40 in Ethiopia, they were among the respected elders whose role in life was to solve everybody's problems because of their wisdom and experience. Then they get to Israel, and within a few months, their children have more knowledge of the new society than they do.
Like every immigrant group in any new language country, you know, it happened in America too.
Absolutely.
This is a difficult thing to put a measure on. But how many lives do you think NACOJ, the North American Conference on Ethiopian Jewry, has saved of Ethiopian Jews over the years?
Tens of thousands.
Wow. So if people want to help, where can they go to find NACOJ?
We are available in our New York headquarters, on our website, in our mailings, and at our street address in New York.
And the NACOJ website is NACOEJ.org?
Yes, it is. And our email is NACOEJ@NACOEJ.org. Our phone number is 212-233-5200.
I want to thank Barbara Ribicoff, Gordon. I want to say Mazel Tov on receiving the Kohan Foundation Award for service to Klal Yisrael, the peoplehood of Israel. There'll be a presentation December 3rd of 2010 at Temple Emanuel in Tucson, Arizona. Mazel Tov, and thank you for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish.
I am looking forward so much to being in Tucson with you.
Thank you, Barbara. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Would you like to make a difference in this world without costing yourself anything? The Mitzvah Corps of Temple Emanuel helps people in need with their mortgages and utilities and other emergencies of life. We've helped many people stay in their own homes and keep afloat long enough to get back on their feet. The Mitzvah Corps has virtually no administrative overhead and no long processing for those in emergency situations. Your state tax credit donation of $200 per individual or $400 per family costs you nothing. The Mitzvah Corps is a state tax credit 501c3 philanthropy, and your contribution is deductible right off your state tax bill and can also be used as a federal tax deduction. Consult your tax professional with any questions.
You can help the Mitzvah Corps help people in our community by sending your donation, check or credit card of $200 per individual or $400 per family to the Mitzvah Corps, care of Temple Emanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, Tucson, Arizona, 85716, or call 520-327-4501 for more information.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be the famed rabbi, speaker, and writer Harold Kushner, author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People and his newest book, Conquering Fear, Living Boldly in an Uncertain World. Our playout this morning is the lovely Ladino Hanukkah song Ocho Candelicas, Eight Candles for Me on Hanukkah, which starts this Wednesday night at sundown. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a Chag Chanukah Sameach, a great beginning to the holiday of Hanukkah, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Hanukkah linda hasta aquí, ocho candelas para mí. Hanukkah linda hasta aquí, ocho candelas para mí. Oh, una candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelas para mí. Muchas fiestas vou fazer, com alegrias e prazer. Muchas fiestas vou fazer, com alegrias e prazer.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.